Hello, and one last time, welcome to episode 3 of Hemophilia and Young Adulthood, a special limited podcast series presented by Bloodstream Stories. I'm Bloodstream Media founder and host Patrick James Lynch. This is episode 3, so I'm assuming most of you have listened to episode 1 and 2. If you haven't, and you're like those people at the airport who just kind of think maybe if they group toward the front of what is very clearly a line, they can cut in as though that line did not exist and there was not an experience to be had prior to the moment of their butting in near the door, I don't have feelings about this. But the point I'm trying to make is that the experience of episode 1 and 2 is important in order for you to enjoy episode 3. So if you haven't heard episodes 1 and 2 of Hemophilia and Young Adulthood, you gotta go back to wherever you're listening to this and find episode 1 on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, BloodstreamPod.com. Search the episodes tab, find episode 1, find episode 2, and then you can join us here at episode 3. We're not ready for you yet. You're not ready for us yet, but we will be ready for each other soon. But for those who are ready, thank you for coming back. I hope you have found this conversation as valuable as I have framed it to be. There are challenges unique to young people with bleeding disorders, and I appreciate that the 10 of us were able to have a conversation about that as openly and honestly as we were. I won't do too much pontificating because Natalie and I are about to do that in the content from 18 months ago. I simply want to say one last time thank you to Takeda, referred to in episode as Shire, which is now part of Takeda, for originally supporting the series and this event. Thank you to Hanjay and to Stephanie for their partnership and support. And of course, thank you to the participants and the young men and their champions for sharing as openly as they did. Please enjoy episode 3 of Hemophilia and Young Adulthood, presented by Bloodstream Stories. Do, if you haven't, subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast, rate and review us on iTunes, share links to this show or any episode you think might be valuable with people who you think could benefit from it, and feel free to give us a shout, tell us what you want to hear about next, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to part 3 of Bloodlines, Hemophilia, and Young Adult Roundtable Discussion, brought to you by Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited, featuring a live conversation amongst young adult men with hemophilia and their champions.
I cannot believe we're already on part 3.
I know, and that voice, by the way, belongs to my champion and co-host Natalie Lynch.
That's me.
This, again, is Patrick James Lynch, and yes, we have arrived at the final installment of our Bloodline series about young adults with hemophilia, which we produced in partnership with the Hemophilia Association of New Jersey and its members.
And obviously we've mentioned HA and J on each episode so far, but I just want to give a quick shout out to Stephanie and to the staff at HA and J for essentially casting this series and bringing this excellent group together. Nicely done, Stephanie and team.
Nicely done indeed. And to that very point, Natalie, while I imagine that most community members listening are affiliated with their local patient organization, for those who may not be, both the National Hemophilia Foundation and the Hemophilia Federation of America have platforms that enable you to locate your nearest NHF chapter or HFA member organization. We have links in the program notes of this episode if you're interested in connecting with your local patient organization.
Our central themes for part 3 of this discussion are dating and relationships, family, and hope. And just before we hop back into the conversation, this Bloodline podcast series is made possible by the support of Shire. Life with a bleeding disorder can be challenging. That's why Shire created Bleeding Disorders Community Facebook page. The Bleeding Disorders Community Facebook page provides useful information and an encouraging community for people living with and people caring for someone with a bleeding disorder. Visit facebook.com/bleeding disorders community today to connect with others and to help take control of your bleeding disorder.
Enjoy this final installment of our Hemophilia and Young Adulthood Roundtable from Bloodstream Media. Dating and relationships. Raj, you talked in your questionnaire, you had referenced feelings of shame and nervousness, worrying would you be pitied for what you had and reasons that you maybe didn't share. You've echoed those sentiments here today, but you know, you two guys being married to these two wonderful women, you two guys being single guys, an audience of people who are in all different forms of relationships and different parts of their life journey. I'm curious to hear from each of you, what was important in the process of dating your now wives?
I'll start, I guess.
You're on, Juan.
I was working at a bank, major bank, which is all over the news nowadays.
I love all these little like drops of like where people work, saying it without saying it.
It rhymes with.
And here comes this wonderful client, walks in through my office and starts requesting information in reference to a credit card. And And I helped her out, and it just went off from there. We ended up dating. I asked her out. She said yes. I was surprised because there's an age difference. As you can see, she's a wonderful young person. Well, she's 27 now, and I'm 34. You know, my father was probably 10 years older than my mom, but...
but it was... That was you outed her. Oh boy! So all right, good luck
I'm
tonight.
Very proud, and you know, I feel really good sitting next to this beautiful person. It was at the time I wasn't embarrassed, to be honest with you, when it came to hemophilia. I disclosed that she understood, and I explained what it was. She didn't really understand what it was. She didn't know what hemophilia was. So I had to start from the beginning and say, "This is." You know, it's in the DNA, it comes from my family, my mom, she's the carrier. But she already had gotten emotional, so she said, oh, I wish I would have known. So I was like, oh, God, she's going to leave me. has it happened in the past? It never did, because that was the first time that actually a partner knew about my hemophilia, which is bad because, yeah, it's kind of not nice not to share that information, especially if you're having intimacy with, you know, your partner. And hemophilia, it's not contagious, obviously, so it's not an issue, but it will be nice. It'll be a courtesy just to let them know. I thought it will be difficult with my wife. I thought she will be, get to the point of leaving me, but it didn't happen, so I was happy.
Well, and just to give yourself a little bit of credit, you know, you mentioned it's not contagious. For those in our community who are affected by the blood contamination crisis and live with HIV or hepatitis C or some kind of transferable disease, obviously disclosure takes a whole different set of circumstances into account. But for something like hemophilia, a few weeks, a month, you know, just my opinion here, not trying to get in the middle or draw sides, but that's a very sensitive thing to talk about. And I know that, you know, before I met Natalie, in my dating history, I know with certainty there are people who I disclosed that to that then that was a deal breaker. But my perspective was always, well, it's going to be a deal breaker now, or it's going to be a deal breaker later. And it's such a big part in my identity of who I am. So it's just, you know, date one, here it is, you know, and then if there's no date two, c'est la vie. And it sped up the process to meeting her.
Wait, you have hemophilia?
Yeah, oh, we should talk about that, actually, after this hemophilia podcast. And what about for you two, Raj and Alyssa?
My dating history before her, I did mention it to some woman that I felt I was getting comfortable with and that I could share that with, and them not understanding it made me feel a little bit of shame. And then when I met her, it was very different because we were in a different stage of our lives. When it comes to intimacy, which is a topic of relationships and conversation, it's something, I guess, that wasn't really discussed from a hemophilia perspective. Around my hip area, right, which is like you could have a bleed, or if you're on your knees, or if you're on... I'm not...
No, like, sex and intimacy is the next thing on the list.
There you go, role play, or whatever it is it's called. you don't know. I mean, if you're, you know, you're... Anyway, so I'm gonna get off the topic.
No, but you're right. But it's not talked about though. It's good that you're bringing it up.
It's not. And you know, I was a very fit individual that loved to have intimacy.
Sure.
As we were starting to date. Once she knew I had hemophilia, just like little spontaneous things. So if I have a knee bleed, am I just going to be laying there, you know, like kind of thing? Is this going to wait kind of thing? So
I think it was kind of natural for him to tell me, because we kind of knew very early on that we thought, you know, we were going to end up together, you know, for the rest of our lives. And I think that for him it was because we decided to move in together. He's like kind of prepped me for like, well, I know you know what hemophilia is, but do you know what it looks like when I need to treat? And because we were living together and he was very active, he's like, I want to teach you how to infuse me. God forbid something happens to him and he's not able to do it. You know,
I didn't think I could even have that conversation and to be able to share that with her. It was a level of comfort. But it's funny because as I started dating her now, it took us together a while to tell her parents.
Yeah,
now, her parents are still not, I think, to this day, are still not 100%. Like we said, we were going to this thing tonight.
Yeah.
And they're just like, what is it, like a cult? No, I'm like, no, it's
yes.
not a cult. Like, no, not to say that no, they're no. not
My
informed.
My parents
they're
are just, wonderful just, people. I think just, now that we're at the point where we've been married and we want to start a family, that's been a different bridge that we've had to gap because my parents they're maybe not are not as informed about it. And, like, their worry is, like, is our grandchild at risk for having hemophilia?
I'm going to use a great example. So we recently bought a house, right? So I guess congrats to us.
Yeah, that's another little big life transition. Hey, congrats to you guys. Yeah, well done. It's the American dream.
Exactly. So I decided to agree with my wife that we'd move close to her parents, so back to where she grew up. And there's a double-edged sword there because now her parents live down the street from us, so they're over whenever they want kind of thing. And, you know, when it comes to doing handy stuff around the house, like I have a deck with a pool, which like requires maintenance. This summer, my father-in-law was like, oh, you got to get under the deck and you got to be able to do like clean it out and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, but do you not understand? There's sharp nails there. I have hemophilia. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to get under here. And I did. I ended up getting under there and probably and had a bleed. But, like, it was annoying, and I was pissed off, and it drew some stress.
I kind of have to be the one, because they're my parents, yeah. to be, like, without him there, like, I understand that you're, the you know, his father-in-law, and you want to teach him how to, because my father's just a very handy person. To him, that's, like, being manly, is mm-hmm. being able to take care of your own house. So I kind of had to pull him aside and be like, listen, you have to treat my husband a little bit differently than he treats his other son-in-law, because, you know, he can't do everything.
His other son-in-law is a cop.
Yeah.
I'm loving this conversation.
I think, like, you realize, like, it's real life. Like, situations come up, and my parents right. are wonderful people, but I think when you're not informed and you just, you know, you just need to educate them, and now my dad has taken a step back.
And the best are family vacations. So we're going to ride quads, and if you roll off the cliff, it's okay, because you could just get back right up. I'm like, nah, me? Someone that has hemophilia probably won't just get back up.
We were just somewhere where we were riding quads last week, and I remember day one there was a conversation about helmets, and I was like, no, I'm absolutely wearing a helmet.
I was the driver.
Yeah.
Like little things like that. So it's funny because family is part of your relationship.
Hey everybody, this special young adult roundtable discussion and Bloodline podcast series is only possible due to support from Shire. Did you know that? You probably did by now because we've mentioned it a few times, but nonetheless, allow me a moment to share with you about Shire's website, bleedingdisorders.com. Shire's website, bleedingdisorders.com, offers resources and support designed for people living with, you guessed it, a bleeding disorder. You'll find everything from information on sports and exercise to tips on finding a local HTC while away at school. That's really handy, whether away at school or if you're moving or if you just need to find an HTC. That's an important tool. As well as Shire's programs and services for the bleeding disorders community. Visit bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, visit bleedingdisorders.com today. And thank you, Shire. Now, back to our discussion.
Natalie, we're talking about intimacy already, but you had a very interesting kind of definition of it and talking about the choice to join this community, which I think would be really valuable to present.
Yeah, so I think outside of physical intimacy, just intimacy of when you choose to marry someone and choose to engage in intimacy, the line between you gets blurred sometimes, and identity, you know, the gentleman in here didn't choose to have a bleeding disorder, but we chose to marry into the community and hence become part of the community. How has that choice been? And, you know, Alyssa, you've talked about the complications with your family. Have you had any complications with your family, Iomara?
Our family lives in Colombia. So it's been an amazing journey. I talked to my mom way back, but I'm pretty sure she's not aware the implications of Juan's having this condition. So when it comes to create a family is, yes, something that we've discussed already. We make the choice, and it becomes one single family. It also creates a place when we have to be supportive of each other, just understanding that it's something that is going to be with us for the rest of our lives.
Another impact that I had in my life was very psychologically because of my mom's passing in 2010, and then my brother coming from the Army and being diagnosed with a severe depression, and he became a diabetic, ended up losing his leg, and you know, those things really kind of impact you socially and psychologically. But obviously, it all depends on you. And she's been a lot of support. Thankfully, she came right at the time where I was facing a difficult, point in my life.
One thing that I take away, though, from this conversation, we were just chatting about this being 32, and as life progresses, all kinds of curveballs get thrown, right? You have a brother who returns and has a situation, so-and-so loses a leg, you lose this family member, a job goes away, you have to relocate. Just because we have hemophilia doesn't mean that our challenges in life are going to be limited to hemophilia, but it does mean that we're always going to have to consider hemophilia when our challenges in life are presented. I'm just a human walking around this world who is vulnerable to all the slings and arrows that any other human being's susceptible to. My hemophilia doesn't prevent any of those from being redirected and allocated to somebody else. And I think that's important as well. So, all right, let's talk about our final topic here. We'll end on a nice hopeful note with just that, hope.
I'd love to start with Justin. What's your greatest hope for the future of this disorder and the bleeding disorders community at large?
I just really hope that everyone is able to really identify with hemophilia as much as possible, because now we live in a very social media dominated age. Just with this podcast and the amount of available resources, there's just so much out there for people like Raj and Juan that you didn't have when you were adolescents. And because we had them when we were adolescents, we were able to grow up with that. And I just feel that as time goes on, the future generations of hemophilia will have just more and more resources, and the community just keeps on growing. And that's just what I'm really looking forward to with the community. It's just going to keep on growing, and there's just going to be so much more out there for the people that are going to be born into it.
Well said.
And Isaiah, what's your greatest hope?
My greatest hope would probably be for people with hemophilia to, like, sort of be able to live like normal people, you know, like more than they do now, and not have to worry about infusions every few days or every week. And then, but at the same time, be able to still come together, like blood brotherhood, and go to different camps and have podcasts and like all these different activities and events that people with hemophilia can come together while at the same time enjoying and living life like everyone else.
Thanks for including podcasts in your list.
My hope is hope for everyone just to continue to remain strong as you go through life and you come through challenges. Know that there's groups like this, there's a lot of these resources that Isaiah mentioned, available to the community just at a earlier age. This podcast is very beneficial because it targets this age group that you're targeting. I hope that, you know, we continue to stay together as a community and be strong, kind of as a united front, you know, tackling this disorder with everyone that's part of it. You know, recently I'm sure you guys got emails and stuff like that, that a lot of the political aspects of keeping the funding and just how some of these programs work. Not that I'm in politics and I'm not campaigning for anything, but it is very important to us, and I would hope that a lot of our listeners or your listeners to this podcast is also thinking about their involvement in that as well, because we're one voice individually, but as a group, as a whole, we're a larger voice.
And Juan, do you have anything to add? What are your personal hopes and hopes for the community?
Even though I consider myself a healthy hemophiliac, my hope is for everybody, not only in the United States, but within the world, to have access to factor 8, factor 9 treatment. Unfortunately, it kills me when I think of the fact that they don't have access to these things, because me being from Colombia, and at the time that I didn't even know what infusion was, just kills me knowing that people out there are having bleeds and they're suffering so much, not being able to manage their pain, not even relying on Tylenol or any drug just to help them cope with their daily activities. And that just hurts me, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. We do a fair amount of work, too, with the developing world, where half of all people born with severe hemophilia die before age 10. And so for our challenges here, I think it's good for us to also appreciate what the United States has to offer people with hemophilia, to keep fighting the good fight for the things that we need, for more resources for mental health, for more resources in general, but then to also keep in mind that we have blood brothers and blood sisters living all across the world, most of whom don't have access to this stuff. So there's still a lot of work to be done. So with that, I want to thank the eight of you, our young men with hemophilia, and our champions for being here, for taking the time, and for sharing very openly. Your sharing enables other people to connect and relate to things that don't get talked about necessarily all that often. So thank you for sharing so openly, and thank you to HA&J for hosting this and really being the engine that got this started, and thank you to Shire for supporting it. Thanks for those who are here. We had a nice little mini audience, so that was nice. And enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening, and with that, we'll say goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our Hemophilia and Young Adulthood Roundtable featuring young men with hemophilia and their champions. One last time, I want to thank Stephanie and HA&J for being an incredible partner on this project, and thank you to Shire for enabling this important conversation to take place. So, Natalie, last thing before we go, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. So
oh, bear boy. With me. Where's this going?
So, for anyone Patrick. Who listens to the Bloodstream podcast, the monthly podcast that Natalie and I co-host, complete with news, interviews, and informed opinionating.
Shameless plug alert.
At the end of that one, which you can subscribe to on iTunes, Stitcher,
oh,
SoundCloud.
Another plug?
It's the end of part three. I got to do all my Bloodstream podcast promo.
I bet next you're going to tell the people they can follow Bloodstream Media on Facebook and Twitter for information about our newest podcast for people with bleeding disorders.
Actually, I was going to tell them that they can email ideas for future podcasts or topics to mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com, but that's besides the point. We close each of our Bloodstream pods with a parting shot.
Pun alert.
Yeah, you're like an alert bot today, a Russian alert bot. We close with a parting shot, and it's one final thought, bleeding disorders related or otherwise, before we sign off and say goodbye. So, Natalie, bring us to a close with one parting shot before we say farewell.
Well, first off, it won't be farewell if the people subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast and join us each month over there.
That is true.
But my parting shot for this series is, I just really enjoyed doing this. Like, I enjoyed being in New Jersey
fun.
And meeting, you know, other champions, which is, it was funny, after we finished the series, I found myself, like, in the bathroom just talking to Raj's wife.
Alyssa, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we were having conversation in there that it was like, oh, this should be recorded. This is, like, really, you know, of, like, what it's really like to, you know, be the champion and wife of someone in their early 30s with a bleeding disorder. Yeah. So, like, I really connected with her and with everyone. But, like, after the mics were off, it was nice to...
And that always happens, too. And, you know, obviously, this is just a selection of topics that are relevant. You know, we didn't even touch on things like finances, for example, and the way that those are impacted. And there's all kinds of things that come up for young adults that, you know, our three 30-minute episodes couldn't cover. So certainly this isn't the be-all, end-all of discussion about young adults with hemophilia and their champions. But hopefully it at least gave our listeners some new thoughts, some new things to think about, and some people to relate to as they go on their own journeys. All right, that was a great parting shot. Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks. I mean, I'm pretty good on the spot.
Yeah, well, they'll find that out over on the Bloodstream podcast, which you can subscribe to. No, I won't do it again. And one last time, thanks to our friends at Shire, sincerely, for making this Hemophilia and Young Adulthood Roundtable podcast possible. We couldn't have done it without their support. We appreciate them recognizing the need for conversations like this to take place. And they know that life with a bleeding disorder can be challenging. That's why Shire created the Bleeding Disorders Community Facebook page. The Bleeding Disorders Community Facebook page provides useful information and an encouraging community for people living with or caring for someone who has a bleeding disorder. Visit facebook.com/bleedingdisorderscommunity today to connect with others and help take control of your bleeding disorder. Thanks for joining Natalie and I here on Bloodline. Remember to check out bloodstreammedia.com to subscribe to all of our podcasts for the bleeding disorders community. My name is Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm Natalie Lynch.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself.